Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Winning Time, Episode 6. Memento Mori is over, but we are just getting started. My name is Grace. I'm here with my co-host, Jason. Jason, how you doing?
Grace, I'm fantastic. Just got finished sewing up the top of my skull back to my head. Got it out of the freezer.
So gross. It's so good. Gross. I wanted to say the line that that Paul gives at the end of his press conference, but I can't pull it out. If it be now, 'tis not to come. If it not to be to come, it will be now. Whatever. Hamlet. He loves Hamlet, this guy. Another episode of Winning Time in the books. What'd you think?
Very different than what we've been getting. We talked about so much how we got spotlight episodes up to now. This is a really plot-heavy episode. And a little little more business went down than I thought would be in the aftermath of Jack's accident.
Yeah. Such a plot heavy episode. We brought in a guest. We initially negotiated $90,000, but he bumped us up to $100,000 at the last minute. And we have to put his name on a shoe. Isaiah is joining us. Isaiah, how you doing?
Hi, Grace. Hi, Jason. I'm very happy to be here to talk about one thing I love, which is basketball, specifically this show. So I'm excited. I'm not a Lakers fan, though, but I can talk about it. But no, this was definitely a plot heavy episode. I think they put a lot of focus on the Buss family, which I'm okay with, and I'm just excited to talk about it.
What have been your thoughts on the show through six episodes?
Obviously, when it comes to like biopic like TV shows and movies, there's always like that aspect where you're like, how real is this, you know? Uh-huh. Like if you watch NWA biopic or the All Eyes on Me and all that stuff, you're like, okay, are they spicing a little bit for Hollywood, you know? But I still enjoy it. I love it. Specifically, I'm glad that they're starting to do like these shows based off of like basketball teams and stuff like that. Like I know they got renewed for like a second season, I believe.
Job security, so. Jason.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. I know that's good for you too, you know.
Yeah, right. Start wagging to a good horse there.
That's right.
Absolutely. But no, I've been enjoying it. I think it's cool.
Yeah, it's been good. I mean, we get another time jump this episode. By the end of the episode, we fast forwarded 2 weeks.
So, yeah, we're moving along at a better pace than we have been. We jumped, I think, like a few weeks last episode. We were like, oh, thank God. And then, you know, at the very end, we got another 2 weeks in the books.
Yeah, they fast forward us 2 weeks, but that's okay. We joke about the pace, but I think it's been good. I think, and I think the renewal, I think one of the things we were thinking was weird about the pacing was that the show was billed as a mini series. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that they, and the very first scene we see is in 1991. So I think some of us thought, well, we're going to get from, you know, the time Magic is drafted until 1991 in one season of the show. And that is not what we're getting at all. We are basically, you know, I think we get to the end of the season, probably the end of this 79 season, at the end of the season, and then go from there. Time jump maybe at the end of this season, but yeah, it's been good so far. This episode, I don't know if it was as strong as the last two have been, but it was good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, just to build off what you were saying, Grace, I was actually thinking that. I was like, so where are they going to really end this all at? Because I mean, there's still a lot of story to tell when it comes to like Magic and Kareem and all that stuff. You know, the whole HIV situation with Magic and all that stuff, I thought it would end around there, but it seems like they got a lot more story to tell. I didn't know if that was either going to mean like a different era of the Lakers, or if they're just going to continue on with the whole Magic era with the Showtime Lakers and all that. But, you know, we'll see how it goes.
There has been some speculation because they optioned that guy's book, which covers like a huge swath of Lakers history, that they could go for a Kobe Shaq timeline in the next season. So that's an interesting thing to think about. But I think we would have a great loss if we just totally ditched this time period and the characters that we've started to establish.
There's so many characters. There's even before Shaq and Kobe, there's still like other players before that as well. So yeah.
Well, we thought about whether this would be like, is a Winning Time sort of the, could this be a little bit of like American Horror Story style, where it's like an anthology show, where perhaps you jump into it, you know, you can even totally different sport. I think with the renewal of season two, I would imagine that they will continue to run through the magic storyline. I mean, the numbers are interesting. It's actually doing similarly to what Euphoria did in season two, not the Euphoria season one numbers and not the Succession numbers, but it's getting anywhere between like, I think like a quarter of a million to 300,000 viewers Sunday night, which is not bad. So yeah, it's not the like breakout success that I think, but I think last week that I think this could be a show where like 8 months from now, people will be like, hey, anybody watch like Winning Time? It turned out to be really good. Like, people will just check it out on a binge later. So
yeah, I feel the buzz is getting stronger every week. I hear more people talking about it. When it first premiered, I didn't feel like anybody was really talking about it, but you and I, Grace.
Magic came out this week, right? He was like, it's not good.
Well, you know.
Magic's you. Like, how do you do a Lakers show without any of the Lakers?
Can
like,
can oh you blame God. Magic for being against this show? And how they're portraying him so far.
In this episode? I don't know, yeah.
I mean, it's I believe a good portion. if you go based off of like documentaries and how people have spoken about how Magic used to move, it's not hard to believe. I mean, like I said, they boosted it a little bit, but I'm like, you're just mad because you didn't get to control the narrative, Magic. If you don't get out of here,
yeah. All right, should we jump into the episode, Jason?
Let's do it. So we strayed a little bit from the format we've had so far. We usually open with a tale from the past of one of our characters, but we run straight into it this episode. We start at the forum where Paul enters Jack's office looking for Jack because Jack has missed their tennis date. Because, you know, he says, you know, the insurance fellow clobbered me. Where have you been? Where are you? So he enters the office and he sees Pat Riley watching footage on Jack's Betamax. You know, Pat and Paul talk a little bit, and Pat saying, you know, he's trying to get in his 27 words because, you know, the other day Chick choked on a vodka commercial and he actually let Pat talk a little bit. So that was a shocker. And he wonders what would happen if Chick dropped dead and how he would finish the game. So Paul talks about the apprentice's dilemma. And he uses the lecture, you know, to talk about how pretty much Paul feels like he's meant to actually be an apprentice and to make someone else greater and not really command the ship, which is a good bit of foreshadowing there. So yeah, they talk about how they talk about Hamlet, about how everyone's destined to be a king, but he didn't want it because he wants to build for it, and laments how he spent a long time being a failure because the best he knew how to do was help others be great, and maybe it's better to be a noble prince than a hapless king. Then we, you know, then we get the fateful call. Paul gets the call about Jack being in the hospital, and he freaks out.
Boy, this conversation happening right before he finds out that the head coach has been in a bike accident and he's going to have to take over the team. A little on the nose, we say.
I mean, so, okay, before I continue, is this like, does it count as spoilers if like I already know what like happens in real life?
Yeah, I think we've talked about this a lot. I think, you know, we'll give the little like, hey, spoilers for real life coming.
If you only know
what's happening to the TV show and you really don't want to be spoiled on the real life events, skip ahead a minute and a half, 2 minutes.
I'm not gonna do it then. Don't worry.
You're gonna do it? Sure, you can.
I don't want to kill the vibe. But this is a Paul Westhead heavy episode.
Yes.
A lot of focus on him as a character or as a person in general. It was interesting to see the perspective that they wanted to drive with him and see like his little mannerisms, see how nervous he was going through all that stuff. I thought it was interesting.
Quirky guy, even before he gets the head coaching job.
Yes.
It's fun. It's like a pretty well-written scene. I just almost wish it was like not the opening to this episode. I don't know. Is there a way that you can do this scene without it being like super like cringe, heavy-handed? To your point, like we know what happens in real life. Like we were talking last week how like Josh Lemer like 2 weeks ago was on and was like, I guess I shouldn't say that like Jack McKinney's gonna like fall on his bike and like be out for the rest of the season, you know. So I don't know even if you can have it in a previous episode where like Paul is there, but it just feels like it's so like, okay, at the beginning of the episode where Jack's no longer gonna be around, right before he finds out that Jack has fallen on his bike, let's have him being like, maybe I'm not meant to be king. Maybe I'm better to be a noble prince than a hapless king.
So you just a well-written line. You wanted to seed it a little bit in the episodes prior, you say?
Maybe. But I don't know if it matters. It is just really like, it's super like very on the nose to have this exact conversation right before it's actually about that. Maybe that's how it happens. Who knows?
Nah, they had Riley to sprinkle that up. Hollywood gold on it. They're like, we need the theatrics, okay?
Well, I mean, like, all the events in this episode took place over, like, what, a couple days? Uh-huh. I mean, I really hope that all this stuff didn't happen in real life within this time frame. That would be just crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we go into the next scene, we go into to Magic in a kind of a pitch meeting. And we get a lot of montages about different people pitching him on different shoe companies. And they got the different people saying it's their job to protect Magic's name and keep us synonymous with success. Everyone wants to name a shoe after him. He tries to tell them that his name is Irvin. They tell him, nope, not anymore. You're just Magic now. You're not Irvin anymore. Magic is immortal. So all the shoe companies are telling him that, you know, he can make a decision, but he just wanted to let you know. We already have a commitment from the one and only Larry Bird. We haven't seen Larry Bird really like in the show yet. We've got the actor. What do you guys think we'll see him at some point in the season?
Well, he's in the previews. I haven't
seen the preview yet.
Like, I don't know if he's going to be like a character on the show or whether he's just, you know, we in the show, we do not actually see a ton of basketball. But all the scenes I've seen him in the previews is he's playing basketball. So I actually don't know how much that lends credence to like that he'll like have a speaking role on the show or whether he'll just be sort of like a presence that we'll see kind of in the same way that we saw like Jack Nicholson this episode. Like, yeah, we got the like Jack, you know, that's Jack. But I don't know whether we'll like, I don't know if Bird fits into the story other than that he is some like kind of a presence that looms around Magic. I don't know. What do you think, Isaiah?
I mean, that's Magic's rival. I mean, like everyone talks about Magic and Bird rivalry. And then if you talk about big three of all time, at one point there would be like Magic, Bird and Jordan, you know? So like it'd be crazy if they didn't have at least one episode where there's like a little rivalry focused or like a game scene or something where they're talking trash to each other. But yeah, I mean, this episode, this scene specifically, I really liked, because if you guys know what 2K is, I felt like I was like watching a cutscene from like My Player Mode, where like you're trying to get shoe endorsements. And then like the money chaser in me, I'm just like looking at all this, and like I can understand why in the moment you don't want to take a gamble and you just go with the easy option, but $5.2 billion in the future that you missed out on, I would be kicking myself. Okay,
you showed the
I linked
him in his one of his biggest regrets.
To a tweet where Magic was talking about it to a panel of some sort, and he was talking about how much he regrets that decision and how he missed out on $5.2 billion. How, you know, he'd have Michael Jordan working for him now, basically, if he was making that deal. So in the show, as Magic is leaving his many meetings, someone runs up to him, who's pretty disheveled, and says, you know, I hope you had your fill of BS, and they're just going to keep shoveling until you become another stallion in their stable. So this person introduces himself as Phil Knight. You know, he's not on Magic's schedule, and, you know, Phil actually calls Magic Irvin, which kind of gets Magic like, you know, like, hey, this guy's actually talking to me, the person, instead of the brand. So he's pitching Magic on a shoe that they have made lighter to be able to make people faster, and shows him a prototype of the shoe that says Nike Magic on the shoe. So he offers to make him a whole line of shoes. He wants more than a smile on the poster. He wants a partner. So Magic asks, so what are we talking about in terms of money? Phil tells him he can't offer what the other guys are offering, but he can offer $1 a pair when they ship out, plus $100,000 in stock options, which is only at 18 cents a share at that moment. Phil tells Magic he wants him to bet on himself and to make it a hit. So yeah, that's where we talk about Magic, you know, turning down, eventually would turn down the offer and you know, not make, you know, Air Magic's a thing.
Well, so this show has been like a little bit like we've talked about since like the snow cones of it all, that like it's kind of showing that like Magic is a pretty smart business guy, and that he, you know, post his career, he'll be, you know, probably one of the, is he probably the most successful, you know, retired, one of the most successful. And so I'm sitting here being like, did I miss it? Were there magic Nikes before there was like Jordans? And so I'm like, no, he turned it down. So it's actually one of the times where like, it's funny that this week is the week that like, Magic saying like, oh, well, I don't know about this show. The week that they show him like missing the biggest financial opportunity, one of the worst business decisions he,
but I mean, look at him,
he still made $100,000 in shoes.
Yeah, looking at it in a vacuum, like, can you blame Magic for not taking him up on his offer? I mean, he seems really like low brow. He runs up to him in the middle of, you know, he doesn't give him an official pitch. He just kind of runs up to him and makes this offer.
Yeah, but that's like the guy, you know, the guy who like shows up at the movie premiere and is like, hey, you want to come hang out? He's like, yeah, sure. Like, there was kind of like a little bit, I thought, like foreshadowing to like, oh, he'll like, you know, he can see where like, you know,
The guy at the movie premiere is offering a little sweeter, a little more immediate than
we see this in the music industry. We see this with sports, like young sports stars, because actually nowadays they get them with these shoe deals in college now. So
yeah.
You know, they definitely take advantage of them now. But it's like it goes from when you come from a place where you don't get money like that, when you see the instant doubt, 100,000, okay, like why wouldn't you take that? So I get it. Like, obviously we can sit here now and be like, oh man, like, how did you not take that Nike deal? But that is a huge gamble, so I don't blame him for not taking it. Who's not going to have regrets after that? You know, everybody wants to see at least some sort of commercial success when you're taking like a shoe deal like that. But like, I'm not going to blame Magic for like not taking $100,000. That makes perfect sense, specifically for right there. That's like Steph Curry, he took the Under Armour deal. No one really thought that was going to do anything, and I mean, it eventually went somewhere, but you have to really be taking a huge gamble on that and a bet on yourself. So I don't blame him. I know the show just tried to dig in him and all that, but I don't blame him.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm Magic, I'm taking $100,000. Like,
yeah.
Oh, same. No, I just think I thought it was interesting that like the show put this little Nike thing in here. You know, I think it's very, very interesting. So I don't blame Magic for not taking a Nike deal. It's just it. Not that Magic has been shown to be a great. He's actually kind of been shown to be a bit of a bad guy. But in terms of his business savvy, he's been shown to be very smart. And this is the first time I feel like that there's like a hole in that. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm.
So we move on to the hospital where we're getting to Jack. Jack is in the hospital, but he's a bloody mess. Still pretty fresh from his accident. Paul enters and he has this reaction. He's like, "Oh, good lord!" And then he looks at his wife. Oh, I mean, you know, oh wow, he looks really
good. He looks good. He looks good. Pretty good, actually.
So the doctor comes in and tells Paul, you know, they're able to dress the wounds, but there's a lot of inflammation in Jack's brain, and he's asking Paul if he's someone that can make decisions on Jack's welfare. And Paul's saying, "Well, the goal is to get him up and walking." The doctor says, "Well, that's a North Star. That's like a big goal." But an injury that severe sometimes comes with thoughts about the quality of life. Paul gets very agitated and says, if that's what a doctor's goal is, and they're just got to find another doctor, this is the Lakers coach. He tells him, like, I thought it was interesting how no one seemed to know, like this was the coach. Like, I feel like now if like the coach of whatever, like NBA or NFL team goes into that city, like no one's going to John Doe him. They're going to know who he is.
Yeah,
that kind of speaks to the maybe not the popularity of the NBA at the time.
But definitely, I will also say, I mean, it was speech to just like there wasn't no social media and all that stuff. It wasn't like you literally saw one of the people listening to a game through the radio, like the, you know. Yeah. So I get it. But like he's like, oh, this is just like who this nobody comes in here and thinks he's somebody. Hell no. So I get it.
Yeah. Anyway, Paul tells the doctors that what they're going to do, you're going to fix him up. Because we got an effing game tomorrow.
We have a game tomorrow. Yeah.
Because this guy who's basically just a lump here is going to be able to get up for a game tomorrow. And I thought it was interesting. You saw a nurse like in the background, like with the rosary beads, just saying a prayer. Because like it's not looking good for our guy Jack.
Yeah, Paul accidentally implies that Jack's dead later when he's talking. He brings up the mention of grief, but it kind of does feel like Paul is in the stages of grief, where he's thinking a bit of denial. At the moment, so.
Yep. So we cut to Jerry at a restaurant. Maybe this might be Octa. What is it, Grace? Octatilla? Where they?
Oh,
were
the Octatilla. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's probably where they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a bottle of champagne sent to Jerry's table, and we find out it was sent over by Jack Nicholson, and we're like, yeah, that makes sense. Jack Nicholson's a very well known Laker player, but then Bus tells us, actually had to get Jack comp tickets all season to get him to do that. So. He tells the bankers who, you know, we never get their names, so I'm just going to refer to them as Bank Guy 1 and Bank Guy 2.
We have a connection from the Discord, though. Yeah, yeah. Person knows one of the actors who's playing. You know what's weird about the Jack Nicholson scene? They just put Jack on the, which, like, everybody else has gotten, like, this is Richard Pryor. They're like, put Richard Pryor on the screen. And they're like, you know, and all these, like, other people, like, you know, Dr. Mike, you know, and Jack just gets Jack. And we're, like, obviously we know who it is. I feel like, so I was like, I don't know who that is.
Well, I mean, if the like impression didn't get you, it's like, you know, that's definitely Jack Nicholson. If anyone knows anything about Jack Nicholson,
I feel like I'm on like the young side of like knowing Jack Nicholson. I think people,
you know, like somebody's got to give Jack Nicholson.
If you're 5 years younger than me, I think there might be a chance you don't know who Jack Nicholson is. I think maybe.
Yeah,
I definitely am not searching him up right now or anything.
Do you not know who Jack Nicholson is?
I know who Jack Nicholson is. I could tell by the voice, but like I wasn't picking him up. Just like, just visually, I was like, is that him?
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying.
I think most people be like, Jack Nicholson. You got to at least know him from like the first Batman. Like, I don't care how old you are, you've seen the first Batman.
I think you haven't seen the first Batman. I've seen the Batman. I've seen all.
Okay,
the Batman.
Okay. I feel like that's what everybody would know him from. But I mean, he was a lot younger than he is now, but.
All I'll say, I think a weird choice to be like the first person where they're just like, why even put up the thing? Why even put a Jack? Like, why even put that up? If you don't need it, you don't need it. That's all I'm saying. Suppose. All I'm saying.
Hollywood.
Yeah. Yep. So Bus is doing his Bus thing, and he's putting on the show for these two guys. And he's telling them, you know, we came up with this concept of putting seats on the floor, and we got two seats right next to Jack. For our great friends at Western Bank. That's where we find out these two guys work for the bank that has the loan for the form. So bank guy number one says, oh my gosh, you know, my wife is going to plot. So she finds out I'm going to be able to sit next to Jack Nicholson. So the guy tells bank guy number two about bus putting seats on the floor, and he says, "Well, we don't get games, we don't get the Laker games in Sacramento, so it doesn't matter." Just, and then bus tells us basically, he's like, "Well, you know, all they get in Sacramento is the clap," which is spreading like the popularity of the Lakers, like the clap in Sacramento.
So shady.
So one of many instances of Bus talking to us this episode, which they kind of brought back this episode. They've been doing it less and less, but this was a big episode for talking to us at the audience.
We got a lot of Magic talking to us, and we got a lot of Jerry Buss talking to us. So
yeah. I mean, I don't mind it.
I like it. I think it works.
So Buss tells us, you know, they're 13 games in, and they have lightning in a bottle with a genius coach and a young phenom, coupled with the greatest player in the league. Again, a lot more unsubtle, like foreshadowing to tell us, you know, before the hammer comes down on the Lakers. So Buss guy number one says the loan with them matures tomorrow, and he assumes from the meeting they're having that Buss wants to talk about a payment plan. Buss says, "Frank, tell him the plan." Frank says, "We don't plan to pay." And the main guys look understandably dumbfounded. Buss tells them they're giving an opportunity to be an official banking partner of the LA Lakers, and they'll need a continuation of the loan until the end of the season and a fresh line of credit to keep the form going. So one of the bank bros asks, "What if they want the money now?" Buss says that the Buss, Mariani, and associates will file for bankruptcy, and they can take all that they have, which right now is officially, what do you got, Frank? Frank pulls $72 out of his wallet. And
he says, I love him searching in his wallet.
He says, "You can have that and this bottle of champagne." So the bank guy number one says, "Well, I mean, we'll also get the team, right?" And Frank says, "Nope." Then tells us that his mother, tells us that his mother is actually a genius for coming up with this plan. And then says, you know, he tells the bank bros that, you know, my wife wanted something gold, so I gave her the team. So he says that they can get nothing, or they can find the balls to stay in business with the Lakers. Buss wishes he could stay, but he has a horny 22-year-old waiting from upstairs. He hands them the projections and says, "I'll meet you at the game tonight." Frank makes sure to grab his money before he leaves the table and hurries off. Buss tells Frank, Frank asks Buss if he thinks the bank bros will go for it. He says they'd be fools not to, because they have Mother Short and Curly's. You know, I think we all know what that means. As they're leaving the restaurant, Claire runs into them and says there's an issue with the food and beverage at the Forum, because the delivery's never made because the bookkeeper apparently sent bad checks to the vendors. Buss says, well, you know, she's an old bookkeeper.
Ooh, I thought the scene with them like getting one over on the Great Western Bank guys was pretty fun. Just the like, you know, and we know it's coming. Like, well, we have the team; it's worth a bunch of money. It's like, well, actually, you don't have the team, as my wife has. It's pretty fun. Frank like scrolling through his wallet to see, you know, what money he can pull out. It's fun. Even like you know, have nothing, and they're somehow able to like look cool and win. You know.
Yeah, I think this is reminiscent of what Buss you know did with Jack in the first episode, with saying, you know, basically, you know, knowing what the situation is and telling them flat out, like, I know I have you here, so this is what we're gonna do.
It's very the Swan, you know, like cool on top and below the surface, like the legs are kicking, like they have no money.
I mean, the Buss family in general, even today, are like big hustlers, so like this is very on brand.
Yeah.
Fun fact, while just because they made that side comic about the claps and the Kings, I was like, I wonder who was in the Sacramento Kings. I don't recognize any of these people other than like Reggie King and like Otis Birdsong, so like I'm like, oh, okay, I see where they're.
Oh, I thought it was a dunk just on the city of Sacramento itself.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't that good either.
Than the Kings, but were the Kings around at that time? Yeah.
Yeah, they were around. They weren't doing anything crazy though.
Yeah. Well, maybe
they're out there spreading disease.
Apparently, there you go.
According to Jerry.
Not much Claire in this episode, but what we do get. Gabby Hoffman kills it, brings her grandson. I was supposed to see with my grandson. And he swears, I think.
Yeah, he says the F word.
Yeah. Yeah. So not much Claire, but when Claire's there, it's great.
For sure. So we come into a meeting that Magic is having with someone, and we find out that it's Dr. Day, who is Cindy's father, Cindy being the girlfriend that Magic is kind of running around with right now from back in Michigan. She as we talked about in previous episodes, has moved out to LA to be a UCLA student and is basically hanging around Magic. While
she's tenacious.
She is very tenacious. And Dr. Day is played by Steve Harris, great actor, who actually happens to be Wood Harris's brother, who plays Spencer Haywood.
Right. Fun.
So it's a big family affair in this show. So Dr. Day is meeting with Irvin to run the numbers of the shoe deal that Irvin, the shoe deals that, that Irvin's been given. He asks if Magic has a lawyer. Magic says, well, I had one that my dad got for me. It's apparently one from Michigan. And the, you know, the guy says, yeah, that's a good guy. But he, when it comes to deals like these, he doesn't know his dick from a doorknob. It's a very interesting metaphor to put out there. Magic says you can say the same about him too, and the lawyer and the Dr. Day says, no, I think you're smarter than that. Dr. Day asks Magic what he wants out of his future. Magic says everything, and he says, oh, kind of like Coca-Cola. Magic emphatically agrees, as if he knows what that means. The lawyer says that to build the promised land, Magic wants, they need to come up with their 10 commandments in order to set up pitfalls to avoid, basically the choices that Irvin would make that would be bad for Magic. Magic says there's nothing to worry about there with him because he doesn't drink, he doesn't do drugs, and then we get a, you know, we get Cindy coming in with a fresh Coke and a kiss on the forehead. The lawyer asks, well, what about women? And he tells him that, you know, in that arena, you got to be smarter, you got to be quieter, you got to keep everyone happy. Dr. Day tells Magic to look over the numbers and talk to Magic at the game the next day.
So quickly, just to close this whole shoe thing, do we really think that he was even considering Nike after talking to Cindy's dad and all that stuff? Because I really don't feel like in real time he was even like blatantly even like considering like signing with them. I think that was just a show doing its work. Yeah.
No, I don't think we get the little cut later when he's like, he definitely regrets it. That's I think.
But he wasn't thinking nothing crazy with that whatsoever. No.
Yeah, they don't show him even like really thinking about it or considering it after that. No. They did cut to like when they were in the elevator a little later coming up to meet Converse. But they did have a shot of Phil like in the bar or whatever. I thought they were coming to meet with Phil at that moment. But apparently not. They're kind of giving us a little fake out there.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, just to talk about Cindy and Cindy's dad, I thought that the relationship with Cindy's dad was a little strange, you know, the farther we get into here, obviously. I mean, he wasn't lying when he was talking about he could do a better job than his lawyer, because, I mean, he got him a bigger contract, obviously. But, I mean, I'm sure we're going to talk about some other things that he was doing a little bit later, though.
Well, even here, it seems like Cindy's dad is like, you know, You can be with my daughter, but I know you're going to be with, like, you know, my other ladies. just keep it on the DL.
This is interesting because both of these characters, Cindy and Dr. Day, are, I believe, everything I've read, totally fictionalized. So to add in the story, his, like, kind of agent is, like, the father of the girl he's, like, kind of dating is very... what are they trying to tell? Like, I mean, you know, we get the whole, like, you know, I'm not the one who should be saying no, you know, I should just be the one who's smiling. Like Dr. Day does give him this advice, but it's very interesting to like insert this totally fictional character that is super entwined in like Magic's like dating life. But I don't know. It's interesting. Yeah.
Do you think Magic sitting at home like, now that didn't even happen? Like, y'all just tripping all this bad stuff to me. Come on, man.
Yeah. Yeah, like, yeah, the everything says that he's probably not neither Cindy nor Dr. Day are real people. So
I think they're he's sitting home irritated, probably screaming somewhere. Like, what the hell? Yeah. What is going
on? I would be.
I'm sure we're gonna see him on First Take complaining at some point.
Yeah, I just think it's interesting that, you know, from the very start, Dr. Day, like, knows what's going on. And Dr. Day seems more like of a, you know, he might even come to be like a kind of a fixer for Magic instead of just an agent. Mm-hmm. You know, he went, you know, not to jump too much forward, but at the end of the episode, he handles like a little bit of business for Magic.
A little weird, man.
Yeah, so, you know.
He sure does. Yeah.
It's interesting. Very interesting. So we cut to Jerry Buss visiting his mom. He's knocking on his mom's door, and you know, you can hear shouting coming from inside. And apparently Jeannie's there. Jeannie opens the door, and you can see a bunch of papers flying around. Apparently there's a, you know, Jesse Buss has opened up all the doors and the windows, and all the papers are flying around because she has smelled something in the house, saying there's vermin in the house. You put me here with a bunch of vermin, something rotting in the walls. Buss, you know, tells her about her accounting mistake, and she gets defensive, as if, you know, she doesn't know what he's talking about. And you can obviously tell she's getting very confused. Buss comes across the transfer of ownership paperwork that was supposed to be filed and processed about a month ago, which is everything that that Buss is really kind of riding on right now. So on this deal with the bankers, because he thinks that he and Frank are in the clear because they don't technically have ownership of a team, but surprise, they still do. Because Jesse never filed the paperwork. So, you know, Jesse is very confused, and she kind of breaks down, and Jeannie's there to hold her. And then Jerry gets the call from Bill Sharman telling him about Jack's accident. Buss freaks out and basically leaves Jeannie to take care of Jesse.
So this is interesting because another fictionalized thing is Josh was on a few weeks ago and was like, yeah, there's no way that the ownership ever got transferred to Joanne. Like, it never happened. And so I'm like walking this episode being like, oh man, the plan worked perfectly. And then I'm like, oh no. For an episode that I think like the writing has been a little bit weaker than what I've come to see from the show so far, I was like, oh, this is pretty, you know, interesting that like, yeah, he's put like, you know, he's a family guy. He's put Jesse in front of like, you know, is keeping the books. She forgets to file this paperwork that's like going to blow up this whole like forum deal, you know? So I actually thought that was just like really clever and a way of like, yeah, this fictionalized thing that we're like, this never happened. Actually like never actually happens in the show even. So I thought it was very good.
I think it's an interesting way to make something fictionalized, but make something like really interesting and intriguing happen in the show.
Yes.
The amount of anxiety to go from like, oh my God, like all these papers are flying over the place. You didn't do the check like you said you would. What is going on? The mom starts crying. And then it's like, wait, I got to go to hospital. Like, I'm anxious for you, bro.
Well, so many things escalate here. Like he starts with like, okay, bad checks to the vendors. Not terribly like destructive. Like it's a problem, but it's not like going to ruin us.
Yeah.
And they, oh, wait, like my mom is in deteriorating health. Oh, wait, like we never transferred the ownership of the team, which is like a huge part of this deal I'm trying to make. Oh, wait, my genius head coach is in the hospital with a very bad accident. Yeah, like you said, it's very, very, very escalating issues of things going on there.
We'll get to what I think is the strongest, like Jesse Jerry scene in this episode. But I do think it's interesting here to note that like he's like Jeannie, like clean this up, like, you know, figure it out. I gotta go. I have something else to deal with. Planting the seeds here for I think what we were talking about last week is like when Jeannie's watching the dance. And we couldn't quite tell, like they're zooming on her face and she looks worried and we're like, why are they showing us that? What is Jeannie supposed to be feeling? And I think after this episode, I'm feeling like, yeah, she is definitely worried. Like, am I like my father in the bad ways? Like, am I like, is this, you know, I don't want to be like, who's like, leaves this, like his mom, who's like clearly not in a good place to go deal with something else. Right. This is a very powerful scene, I thought. And you're right, I had so much anxiety from the moment the scene started. There were papers all over the floor. I was like, no, it can't get worse than that. All the papers flying around the apartment. Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely Jerry leaving Jeannie to clean up his mess in a way, which is something that he's really kind of done. Not clean up his mess, but really kind of back him up and do the things for him that maybe she shouldn't be doing. Maybe it's a little far out of her reach. We get to the hospital. Jerry joins Bill and Paul in the waiting room. Jack is apparently still in the operating room. And he came in as a John Doe, and his wife found him there, I guess, worried that she couldn't find him, checked the hospitals and found him there. The team physician, Bob Curlin, comes to meet with them, and Paul asks if Jack is awake. He says, I hope not, because the top of Jack's skull is sitting in the freezer. He says, but just temporarily, until the swelling of his brain goes down. Bob tells him the next few hours are crucial. Sharman wants to call the league and postpone games. Bus says no way and to not tell the press a single thing. Bus wants to downplay the injury to everyone in their air and tell them they're erring on the side of caution, and tells quote-unquote Pete that he'll be coaching tomorrow. Paul says, you got the wrong apostle there. I'm Paul. And Bus says, get your head out of your ass and ask him if he can coach the game. And Paul, you know, great Jason Segel delivery, like, sure. And then, you know, he says, well, I do the scouting and the game prep, so I could probably do one game. Bus just basically tells him, don't lose. That's all. I just found it interesting, you know, in only a couple of months' time, I think probably, you know, Paul Westhead went from a college professor to the head coach of the Lakers.
Yeah. Wow. I don't even know what I would do if I was in this position where you just get thrown into the spotlight. You're in charge of like this brand new team that's on the rise, and you have so much that's basically on your shoulders. If you lose, you're going to look like a complete jackass. I don't know if I'm on the curse over here.
That's fine.
But you know, it's like the amount of stress. Like I completely get it. So I thought that was a very interesting scene. I like the delivery from all the people in this instance as well. So how did you guys feel about it?
Yeah, well, this is like Jack saying, like, if my strategy doesn't work with the best players in the world, it's just a strategy that won't work. And I feel like there's definitely some of that energy here with like Paul suddenly being the head coach of the Lakers. Like, he gets that, can you coach the game tomorrow? He's like, no. Yes, I can. I've done the scouting reports, I've done all this stuff. Like, I probably can. He's like, I can coach one game. It's great. The physician here, Bob Kierlin, as you mentioned, is like one of the most famous like sports doctors of all time. And I feel like why didn't they give him a thing? He should get a thing. He's I think like his partner, like he's the co-founder of this orthopedic clinic. Dr. Frank Jobe invented like Tommy John surgery. Yeah. At their clinic. Like this is a guy who's like was an athlete and then had like rheumatoid arthritis, and like so certainly like well understanding of like what pain athletes go through. Mm-hmm. So kind of cool to see him just pop up here. But I didn't know it until I looked, like I was like, who's that doctor? Yeah. So they should have put a little thing. They're very inconsistent with who they're labeling, I have to say.
Well, you know, I don't think he's Jack Nicholson famous or Richard Pryor famous in a little bit.
Yeah, but they have a guy later that they just put Dr. Mike. There's like Dr. Mike. Who's Dr. Mike?
They did that for all Survivor fans, obviously. Okay.
I'm done.
Perfect.
we go to the forum and you know they're getting to meet with Bank Bros, and Bus tells Frank, you know, he's cursed, and Frank says, yeah, but I mean nobody knows you're cursed. Good logic. Okay. There, I think.
Frank's the best. I need a Frank in my life.
Frank tells Bus that by the time the guys from the bank become wise to the fact that they still own the team, that the new deal should be done unless they see that Bus is panicking. Frank tells Bus, hey, you're Gene Kelly, you're Fred Astaire, you're Ginger Rogers. So tonight you're going to do what? So we get a nice montage of all those people that they named doing these different dances. And Bus says he's going to dance. And he embraces Frank. And then one of the Bus bros comes in and makes a off-color joke that I won't repeat. Mm-hmm. Bus fake laughs. And Bus comments on the Michael Jackson performance. Apparently there was a Jackson's concert there that night. So they after the concert they all went to the Forum Club, where we see a lot of dancing, a lot of drugs, a lot of things going on there. Were you surprised we didn't get a Michael Jackson cameo? I would say it's off color, but we did get a Bill Cosby cameo earlier this season.
We get some, there's another one too. I'm thinking maybe I'm missing it right now, but I feel like we've had a few people who what's his name for the owner of the Clippers, Sterling too, Sterling, right? Yeah. So you know we've had I think that maybe the Jackson impersonation is a little bit tricky. So yeah, I mean that's fun. Also, I don't know if Michael Jackson's like going to party. I feel like he's.
I mean, him and Magic were friends.
Were they?
Yeah. He actually invited him to a game one time, and there's a whole story behind that. But they're friends.
Well, in the club there's a doctor there. That's Dr. Mike.
Dr. Mike.
Yep, offering them drugs. Offering the whole team drugs basically. And Cindy says, she and Magic from Michigan, so they don't really know anything about that. And Norm says, the only thing country over here touches is a Coca-Cola. All the players decline. Spencer's wife says that he's a vegetarian. And we find out that Spencer Haywood's wife at that time was Iman, who will one day be David Bowie's wife, which is an interesting factoid I did not know. What do you guys think of about that?
Yeah, it was cool. It's interesting. It's cool. Yeah.
Interesting.
I thought the impersonation was good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not a David Bowie fan. So I was like, oh, okay.
I knew that Iman was married to David Bowie. I knew that was a factoid, but I'm not a big David Bowie fan either.
You guys aren't David Bowie.
Same page. Same page.
Me and Isaiah are on teams all the time, so we're like minded. We're not David Bowie.
Great minds think alike.
Okay. I was in England the day David Bowie went and went to the place where he grew up, and there was the day he died. There was like obviously people like gathered by this memorial for David Bowie that had been painted before, and people just hung out and sang David Bowie songs all night. It was like one of the most surreal experiences I've ever had in my life. I'm a huge David Bowie fan, but yeah, it's cool. Like, all right, that's interesting. Again, inconsistent labeling, I think, but that's fine.
Oh my gosh. So I have to mention that Spencer's wife says he's a vegetarian. Richard Pryor walks in, played fantastically by Mike Epps, who has for years been trying to get a Richard Pryor biopic going. So it's good that he got to play Richard Pryor finally. So Richard Pryor walks in and says, I guess that means he doesn't eat a certain thing. If you saw the show, you know what I mean. Pryor introduces himself to Magic and Norm talk about Magic shooting the TV show The White Shadow. Pryor explains the difference between N-word famous and white famous. He says Pryor Magic or white famous, a type of famous where white grannies wanted to clutch their pearls and even want autographs from you. And Pryor asks to talk to Magic alone and tells Magic that you know, fame for them isn't natural. They aren't born for it, they aren't made for it, and they sure aren't ready for it, but everyone else around them are ready for it, and they will all hang around him to pounce on his fame. Pryor asks Magic's real name. Magic says he's Irvin. Says, well, you can say presto to that, Ed Meffer, because he's gone, which is the first cost of business with the white man. And just as if it was on cue, Jerry Buss comes over and says, Magic, come on over here. So Buss introduces Magic to the Bank Bros. Buss explains to the Bank Bros that every company is trying to get Magic and his smile in their ads. But he is all theirs, as his smile is Lakers property. And asks Magic what product they're trying to get him to endorse this week. Magic tells him about the Nike deal. Bank guy number two says, well, I hope you dodge that bullet, and that Nike will likely not even survive the quarter. Then Cindy comes over and introduces herself to the guys, pretty much inserting herself into Magic's business. Magic introduces her as his date for the night. Cindy is a little bothered by that, and Cindy says, well, Magic, maybe we should just start signing autographs. Magic kind of smiles and nods and kind of goes with it. What'd y'all think of this scene? A lot packed into this one scene here.
Yeah, there's a lot. Okay, again, I'm going to say inconsistently, Richard Pryor does not get labeled here, but he does get labeled later when he shows up. So again,
yeah, that was weird. That was really weird, wasn't it?
I think later, because they're making a joke that, like, I think whether Haywood ends up going to the after party, which we don't see, or whatever. But like, I think the label is like an influencer or something, implying that Richard Pryor will
come. A positive influence, because he offers Haywood a number of things that we'll talk about later.
So that's like, whatever. But again, Richard Pryor shows up and they're like, yeah, I mean, fair enough. I don't think Richard Pryor needs to be labeled to the point of Jack Nicholson earlier. But anyway, yes, it's real. I think the scene is really good. It's a little bit like, would Kareem have not been super fit? Like, I feel like there's a little bit, the writing here is a little bit to like get this moment where like Richard privately is talking with Magic and being like, hey, like, there's going to be, you know, your name is got your old name. It's gone. Like, you know, you are, you were like owned now. Right. But like Kareem would have been like, he was in Airplane, you know, he would have been as famous as, you know, he's Richard Pryor famous. I feel like
you don't have to have this conversation with Kareem, because goes against Kareem's, always been against Kareem's values. But mm-hmm. Magic, you can just kind of tell looking at Magic that he's going to be a little like starstruck and maybe mm-hmm. fall into the trappings of Hollywood.
Good point. Yeah, fair.
So I think that makes sense. Go ahead, Isaiah. Sorry.
I was going to say, this was the beginning of a lot of toxic energy between Magic and Cindy as well. They should have set like some boundaries, because like, what y'all doing? You know, Magic should have been like, that makes me uncomfortable, don't do that. And then she should have been like, why didn't you claim me? You know, like they could have talked it out. But this is just the beginning to the end for these two.
I think it's when it gets called the date and she's like, are you gonna tell them how I like actually clean your drawers and like wash dishes? Yeah. Like, are you gonna tell them that? And offering up the autographs. There's a quick little beat in here when they're talking about the Nike deal, and banker number one is like, that guy is a fraud with a pipe dream. And it cuts to Jerry looking like, people said that about me, you know, like people, you know, yeah. Like this little look that I think is like, is really well done. There's so much in the scene, but I think it's really well done.
Yeah. Yeah. I think just as we've seen a theme in this show, you know, as Magic is kind of being owned by these people, they're selling him like a product, is a big theme then and even now, really. Yeah. So I think that's a pervasive theme in this whole show, especially after we just got this conversation from Richard Pryor. So we cut to Magic and Cindy walking what seems to be the locker room, one of the areas in the locker room. Magic is mad that Cindy is calling them a we. Cindy says, "There's someone trying to help." Magic says, "I didn't ask for you or your father's help." And she accuses her father of trying to set him up with her. And Magic accuses her of wanting a piece of the magic and tells her to be real. Cindy kind of turns it back on him and says, well, I want, you know, Irvin, like, you remember who you are, Irvin, and then tells him that she loves him. Magic says, how can you love me when you don't even know me? Ooh, deep. He asks Cindy if he was still picking up trash in Lansing, if she would still be there doing everything for him while he's been talking to Cookie, which really kind of strikes deep. Cindy asks how Cookie's doing. Magic says, you know, oh, this is, well, you know, this is the man that you love, right? So I'm talking to all the women behind your back. He storms out and tells her to leave her alone. And she tells him, yeah, that is the man I love. Magic asks her why. She says that she sees what he doesn't, and she sees him. They start making out. Things get a little more passionate. She tells him that she loves him. He does not respond getting down, as
you get an angle. Yeah, this angle, yeah, to the scene. Yes.
So yeah, that was a. I feel like she's trying to tell herself that she loves Magic, but she can't even really tell him why she loves him. She's just like, I see you. Like she's in a movie. Like, oh, I see you. I love you because I see you.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the person that we've seen from the beginning who like can actually see Magic is Cookie. And this feels like off-brand Cookie a little bit. I see you, you know, I calling him Irvin. She can like kind of press the right buttons, but not totally, you know. It doesn't really work. Like, Magic gets what he wants out of this particular interaction. But at the end of the day, they will not be.
I just found it interesting as maybe Cindy is kind of seeing herself as well as they are getting a lot more passionate. You can see her crying a little bit as it's happening. So maybe I wonder if she is thinking about what she's doing.
Yeah, I forgot that it's really well filmed with like there's like two teardrops that fall from Cindy's like face. That's like it's like this intimate moment. You're like,
oh, I was also going to be like, why are they doing this in a locker room? Like
the trainer room. Yeah.
Hey, Magic's really getting down anyway. Guy, man.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody else sees this, but I still see Cindy as young Beth from This Is Us. So this upsets me greatly.
Yeah. Let's take a quick commercial break. We come back, we'll chat through the rest of the episode.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, we are back.
So we cut back to Jerry Buss in the Forum Club. Buss lets us know. He says, well, if you want to win friends and influence people, you can read the book. But if you want to celebrate Western Bank on basketball, just get them laid. Ooh. Big quote there from Jerry. Bank guy number two says, well, we can offer you a six month extension. Buss turns us, say, see what I tell you. But bank guy number two says, we'll have to do it at a 30% interest rate, which is not part of Jerry's plan. And bank guy number two says, you know, I kind of got you over a barrel. If you're the businessman you say that you are, you're going to turn down my offer and we'll see you in bankruptcy. I do at this point wonder, they didn't really make it explicit whether or not they know about the failed transfer ownership.
I don't think they do, because I don't think there's any reason why they would know. I guess they could have like looked into it. I feel like they would be more explicit if they know. I think it's just like, yeah, we could take you to bank. Like if you're like ace up your sleeve is like, well, we'll just file for bankruptcy. I do feel like they could just, you know, they're a giant bank. They could just be like, yeah, file for bankruptcy. We'll take whatever you have, which is probably actually more than they probably have some buildings and stuff. I know they sell off a lot of stuff to buy the team, but
yeah, it feels like, yeah, it's kind of calling Jerry's bluff here for a minute. I think this guy, even though he's only bank guy number two, he's kind of one of the fiercest like obstacles that Jerry's come up against, because he's calling his bluff outright.
Yeah. I mean, Jerry pretty much very quickly like takes the deal and he's like, you know, extend it till June and we have a deal, you know?
Like I said, Buss wants them to extend it to June. Bank guy to ask why. Buss says, cause when we win the championship in May, I have to take a couple weeks of vacation and then I'll have to go to Sacramento, walk into your office and make you beg for our business at your bank. Bank guy number two accepts and says, hope you keep winning. Buss says, you can count on it. Buss being as confident as ever.
Yeah. So you asked me earlier, like, how much are we getting to spoiler territory? I don't think this will be a major spoiler. This is kind of like the end of the Great Western, but, you know, maybe there's more to come in the show, but the forum eventually gets called the Great Western Savings and Loan Forum, I believe. I don't know the exact, the Great Western Forum is what it eventually gets called. The late 80s, so it'll be a while before that actually happens, but certainly Buss is absolutely right that like these guys will absolutely want to keep doing business with Gary Buss, the Lakers, and the Forum, so yeah.
I mean, you see Jeannie Buss, she's running the Lakers right now. So, I mean, the Buss family is going to be running the Lakers for a very long time. And obviously that's a big portion of why they're so rich to this day. So, good call.
Yep. We cut back to the Forum parking lot. Paul is in his car. He's kind of sulking a little bit, and he's reading the paper, and he's reading an article about the team partying while their coach is in a coma. And West catches him in his car and tells him, you know, if people catch you looking sad, you're going to be in the next day's paper as a new headline. So Bill's apparently sent West to try and walk Paul through the press and that has gathered at the Forum to talk to the new coach. West says it's important to meet the Buzzards on your own terms, and that the important thing is to project a sense of calm. And, you know, you're not just talking to the press, you're talking to the team, and you're talking to every other up and comer who can smell blood and we're the meat. Paul says Jack will be up and running by halftime, and West stops and says, no, don't say that. You want to make the headline here. It says, where'd you get your medical degree? It says, you know, don't make the headline, as the buzzards will F him in the ass. And Paul says, well, I don't want to be buzzard F'd. West tells him to give the press as little as possible and say that Jack is on the mend and that Paul will be holding down the fort. Paul asks, Paul tries to get West to do this. West says, F no.
No way.
West tells him if he gets hampered to go to his comfort zone. Paul asks, what's that? I was good to see that West is still, you know, still involved and still taking some leadership, but he's not willing to take the complete thing back over.
Hilarious that Paul's like, West is like, you need to be calm, you need to relax. If I, like, the first three episodes of the show is Jerry West like yelling on the golf course, like throwing his trophy through the window. Like, he is like an angry, angry man. He's like, you need to figure it out. You need to calm down. Come and do this. I love him giving the cashmere sweater, but don't stretch it. It's cashmere. Like, don't stretch it. You know, it's just it's really great. I love West's role here in the show post retirement as coach.
Yeah, he just needed a breather. You know, he's all good now. He's in a place of zen now.
Yeah.
Jerry West is, I'm pretty sure, he's one of the best businessmen in like NBA history, even to this day right now. I think he got, let me just check. Yeah, he got executive of the year like twice. He's always been like free thinking and stuff like that. So it's kind of cool to see their depiction, at least, of early Jerry West in his business years.
Yeah, we talked a little bit earlier in the season about how a lot of people that were around Jerry West said this isn't like him at all. Like, this isn't how the West they remember. But, you know, it's a show.
Yeah. We also saw him at like literally the worst time of his career, you know, and when he's going to decide that like he is not good enough to be the coach of the Lakers and he'll move out of that role. So,
So we move to the press conference. At first, Paul is sticking to the script, but then he starts to kind of veer off course. He says that right now their concern is Denver and Skywalker Thompson. But he starts to add a little bit and intimate that maybe he talked to Jack, and it starts a whole new run of questions about Jack's health, where Jack is.
I love this innocent little joke of like, he's just maybe he's trying to play hooky. And they're all like, oh, you talked to him?
Like, wait, what does that mean? And Paul tries to get back on script. And I love Bill talks. Bill looks at Wes and says, what did you tell him to say? Wes says, I didn't tell him shit.
Like writing off the whole thing.
Yeah, it's like, I didn't do anything. So the reporter asks if Jack is in a vegetative state and what they want to tell the fans. Paul says, quote, if it be now, it is not to come. If it be not to come, it will be now. If not be now, yet it will come. And he makes a blowing gesture, says the readiness is all, and Bill tells West to get him off the stage. West comes up to Paul, says, what the F was that? Paul says, well, that was my comfort zone. He told me to go to my comfort zone.
Hamlet, that's my comfort zone. It's great.
And all the reporters pretty much just left like gobsmacked, like, what even was that?
Paul's great. I like Paul a lot.
Paul's nothing grown on me, I think.
Yeah. Jason Segel, he's great. Great performer. Mm-hmm. Yep. So yeah, it's been fun.
So Pat and Paul get together. Paul's been trying to go over Jack's notes and his game plans. Pat tells Paul that this is Jack's plan, let it go. And he asks Paul what he would do. Paul says he'd do something a little off the wall, maybe start Cooper. Then maybe maybe I'll stick with Haywood. No, Cooper. Pat suggests Haywood, and then Paul asks Pat if he wants the job. He's really trying to pawn off everything that he has right now. We shoot to a shot of Jack in his office going over a game plan. I think probably what this ends up being is he's just cut. Jack's maybe in his own head, in his own consciousness, thinking of a game plan. As we cut to Paul in Jack's hospital room trying to game plan next to a comatose Jack. He talks to his wife about the what is it called, Grace?
Memento mori. That's like a sign of death.
Sign of death. Latin phrase means remember you die, and that life on earth is only a preparation for an afterlife. It's basically life is meaningless and all earthly things are vanity. And then Paul tells his wife, and I can't believe I have to coach this game.
I love she's like, he explains it, and she's Cassie, his wife is like, that's so sweet. Like, Shakespeare put on all the wax seals after Sunday. She's like, that's so sweet. And he's like, it's what a nice thing. And Paul's like, no, it like actually means the exact opposite. It means like life is meaningless, all earthly things are vanity. He's like, no, you took the totally wrong like intention, meaning out of the memento mori. Yeah.
So we cut to the hospital waiting room where all the players have gathered. Michael Cooper says, you know, it's all over, you know, and that Westhead is not a fan of his, and Westhead can't wait to cut him. Haywood is telling Cooper that, you know, you just kind of nervous as a cat in a building full of people dying, and that no one ends up in the NBA by accident. And he's supposed to be there, McKinney or no McKinney. Any fool can see Cooper's talent, even Westhead. And apparently, he's right behind me, isn't he? Was basically, damn, I just talk crap about him right in front of him. So, you know, Paul kind of shoots him a look. Paul addresses the team and says Jack is better, but not well enough for visitors, and he'll see them at the game tonight, furthering the lie that Jack is doing better when he's still in a coma. Then we get Cindy entering with flowers from Magic, saying, unfortunately, Magic couldn't be here, but she helped Jack's note. Jack knows how much he meant to us, and the eucalyptus is good for Jack's breathing.
Cindy.
So I don't think this was a good move by Cindy. It made Magic look bad, because it made it look like, oh, you're too Hollywood or you have more important things to do than come with the team to go see Coach, so you just send your girlfriend. And you know, it did.
Well, I mean, half that was true. He was more important business to take care of than visiting his ailing coach, but he did not send Cindy. Did you think that he sent Cindy in the, you know, when he saw this, or did you pick up that, you know, Cindy did this on her own?
I don't think he's sent her.
The I thought that he sent her, but then the flowers seem excessive compared to like what anybody else is doing was like the read that I took. It's pretty bad to not go if the whole team is going. It's pretty bad, oh, yeah. Magic. I feel like this is one of the episodes, I think, other than the episode where he's like beating up on, like he's like has the pickup game with Brian. I think this is the worst look episode for Magic, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we don't even see any like basketball success in this episode. And he makes a giant shoe deal that's like about the best you can say. And even that one, they're like, yeah, totally messed up. Should have signed with Nike. So yeah, I thought that like it was kind of like she kind of like overdoes it and is like playing too much, but that he did send. I guess it makes sense that he wouldn't send her. Like he does not see them as like he's calling her his date for the night, you know.
Yeah, I mean, what did y'all think of the overall like tone of the players and how they handled the Jack situation? I felt like it to me came off as like they didn't care that much. Like they just kind of. They were kind of there, and they were at the hospital, but they were just like they were talking casually, and they're in a locker room. They're like, okay, that's nice. Who's gonna guard Thompson? Like,
well, I wonder if it's a bit of the like the nature. You know, funnily enough, that like we've talked about, like the show has moved so fast that we moved. Like we've gone from like a bunch of us want McKinney not to be the coach of this team. Right, they go to West and are like, you need to do something about this, to then the strategy like working and then winning a bunch. But because we fast forwarded through a lot of that, I don't know that we haven't really seen like McKinney as the like coach much. We had a McKinney Magic scene, right, where he's like trying to make him be the leader of the team. We haven't really seen any like, and I don't know whether this is McKinney or not, like what type of like personal relationship he had with any of them, if at all. But because we didn't get that, then I feel like the show doesn't want to spend time on like they're all bummed out about, and also they're kind of being lied to. And again, in the age of social media, you know, although I guess the papers are being like, the guy's definitely in a coma, right? Yeah. So yeah. I don't know.
It just seemed like they were like, oh, well, we move on. Like,
yeah,
we got a game to play.
Yeah. Yeah, it would have been nice. Like, you could have done a thing where, like, because last week, Kareem puts his hand in the huddle, right? Or is that 2 weeks ago?
That was last week, yeah.
Like, you could have done a thing where, like, Kareem's like, you know, it doesn't matter how hurt but he is in the hospital. Like, come on. Like, we need to win this for him or something, right? Like, somebody having some moment that's a little bit like that if the team is down, but... Yeah,
they do the fake little Jack on three later in the locker room.
They do.
It just doesn't feel.
And Kareem sincere. Does call out Magic for he's the one who calls out Magic for not coming. So
yeah, I thought that was more of like a politics thing than you care about this guy thing.
Right.
It just to me, it just didn't feel like sincere that anyone was really that worried about Coach.
It feels more like the same that image talk that Kareem and Magic have, right? Where it's like everything you do reflects on all of us. And so if you're not going to like come to see the coach when he's not, you know, that just looks bad, you know, which is more so his image than it is like Kareem probably caring about Jack, you know?
Yeah. So we cut to a scene with Magic in an elevator with Dr. Day, and he asks Dr. Day, well, so what should I say to the companies that I'm not going with? Dr. Day says, you say nothing. Like, don't muddy up that smile with any bad news. That's my job. So we find out that the meeting is with Converse, and they say to him that we're thrilled to welcome you to the stable. And you get that little twinge of remembrance from when Phil Knight was talking to him. He says, yeah, let's make you another horse in their stable. I think you get a little shot of Magic being like, oh, yeah, that's what that guy said. That's kind of right. So Dr. Day says that he wants to make some adjustments to the contract because they found out that Larry Bird is going to make $90,000 off this deal. And he believes that now they should get $100,000 from the deal. Now, I know that we said that the deal is great, but the Converse people were like, OK, sure.
I know. Have you ever had those negotiations where you're like, I've done it at work where I'm like, actually I need like this much in my salary. And they're like, oh, we can do that. And I'm like, I failed the negotiation.
Yeah.
Like,
I should have got a lot more than that.
Yeah. If they don't say like, I don't know. Like, can we do this? Like, I think you failed the negotiation. Like best case scenario, you've got like the absolute peak of what they were willing to go to. But I always feel like I failed. So I feel like they failed the negotiation here.
Yeah, for sure. So Magic wants them to ask if they can add the name to his shoe. He wants to title it The Magic and says, you know, no one else has even thought of that. We cut to Phil Knight looking straight at us and, you know, it's like, really? Because that was his idea first.
This is where I think, where come on, we signed your name on the dotted line. Like, you won't regret it. Phil's like, he regrets it.
Yeah.
Isaiah, did Larry Bird, the whole thing where they're like, he agreed to 90, Larry Bird also wore Converse? Is that the...
Let me fact check for you. I feel like he did. Back then...
I think Converse... they were both Converse, I think, which is kind of weird. If they're like, I mean...
Yeah, they were.
The best shoe at the time.
Because it was him and Kevin McHale. They definitely had a Converse commercial. Listen, Larry and Magic constantly were rivals for everything. If it's not for a chip, if it's not for endorsements, if it's not literally just arguing on the court, they had a rivalry. So like that was their thing. Converse at the time was like the hot shoe that everybody was wearing back then in the NBA. You don't really see people wear Converses anymore. They're not that comfortable. That was like the big get. And he's like, oh, Larry's getting 90, we won 100. You know, so I thought it's a very interesting dynamic.
It's come. I think the Bird stuff, certainly, I think you're asking before, it's coming because they've, you know, there was the national championship game, the signing bonus. Now we get the sneaker signing. You have to think on the court. We're going to get some Larry Bird, Magic Johnson.
Oh, absolutely.
Do they have any? I mean, I don't want to spoil, but like, do they have big champion? Like, I guess if we're only going to do this season, it's like it'd be whether they match up in the playoffs or not. But anyway,
oh, absolutely. I mean, well, first of all, they're Eastern Western, so I mean, you know, they have to go against each other. But yeah, they've been in the finals. Yeah,
but we probably won't see that this season.
They let me see.
I don't think the Lakers and the Celtics play each other in the finals.
Not that year. No,
not that year. Yeah,
not that year.
Yeah. Anyway.
Give it a couple more.
Yeah.
We keep renewing the show. Come on.
Yeah. So the Converse guy, you know, to Magic's ask about getting his name on the shoe, says, yeah, we'll run up the flagpole, but why don't you sign this first? And that's when we get the flash on the screen that says, Nike stock, 18 cents in 1979. Stock today is at $134 a share, which means that Magic has missed out on $5.2 billion to date. And this is where we get the Phil Knight looking at us. So yeah, he regrets it. we then cut to Jerry at his mom's house again. He basically tells us, you know, his father was a genius and he's more of a number guy, like numbers more than people. In fact, he liked numbers more than me. And he left us high and dry when I was born. His mom was 19 at the time, had to raise Jerry on her own. But she got them there, and she is a tough broad. He meets with a doctor that looks at Jesse, and the doctor says, well, you know, she's exhausted but coherent. But says, well, maybe she just forgot to eat. I don't know, for a straight month. That was weird. The doctor suggests a full workup in the meantime, but it also tells Bus, you know, I want you to carry yourself, too. You also look tired. Maybe keep it down to a pack a day as far as cigarettes.
I love that's the doctor's advice in 79. Like, hey. pack a day at most, you know.
Yeah,
not, I mean, like, maybe stop working.
Yeah, Jerry's had a pretty tumultuous like 2 days, so I know one day he looks pretty tired.
Yeah.
Jerry says, you know, see, she'll be fine. Jesse says she wanted to go out with a bang, but instead she is sitting here rot. Jerry says, bullshit. Alcohol is a preservative.
So good. It's such a good line.
So Jeannie, you know, tells Bus she messed up everything. Jerry says she got him where he is today. Jesse says she messed up everything. Jerry says she got him where he is today. Jeannie and Jerry go down the elevator, leaving the mom's house, and Jeannie is kind of blaming herself. Says it's her fault, and that she noticed that on opening day that she didn't know what day it was. Bus tells Jeannie, you know, get it together. She's gonna be fine. Pretty much deluding himself. So this was an interesting scene. You know, Jesse, Sally Field again, just crushing it as Jesse Buss in all of her scenes here.
I love the scene. I think that like this is some of the most emotion we've gotten from Jerry. Like when Jeannie like sort of like they're like joking and about the alcohol as a preservative line, which I just think is like great. And she's like, at least I taught you to laugh. And she's like, I messed everything else up. And he's like, do not talk like that. Like, I am where I am because of you. And like Jeannie sort of comes and she goes, oh, I'll come back. And like, just like it's so subtle, but like he turns around to look at her and then he looks back. And he just like wipes his tear from his eye. It's like so good. Especially coming right after the scene where he's like, my dad just totally up and left. Like my mom was the only person who like raised me. It's really, really strong. Scene here.
Yep. We flash to the forum. Paul's in his car looking pretty solemn and pretty upset. He leaves the car, and then we notice that he left all of Jack's notes and Jack's game plan in the car. He addresses the team and he tells them he knows it's hard and the hearts are heavy. They got a job to do and there's nothing more than Jack would want than a win. Paul uses a quote, give us all our words. The grief that does not speak whispers the o'erfraught heart and bids it to break. All the players look pretty confused. Magic, so is Coach dead? Paul says no. Everyone seems to breathe a sigh of relief.
Ooh, thank God.
So we get, right after that, it's like, okay, well, let's get to the game plan. Moving off of that, Norm asks, you know, well, who's guarding Thompson? Haywood volunteers, but Paul says, not so fast. He tells Cooper that he's starting, but that he's benching Haywood. Hayward comes up to Paul, says, you know, is this because, you know, you overheard me and Cooper talking about you earlier? Paul says, no, it's a basketball decision, nothing personal. Norm asks Magic if Magic, you going to play or are you going to let your girl play for you? Magic is pretty confused, and they let him know that, you know, talk about how Cindy came to the hospital instead of him. And he's pretty confused because he did not send Cindy to the hospital with any flowers. And you know, that's when Kareem tells Magic, well, you know, you actually should have just been there yourself.
They are so toxic, okay? They're so toxic.
Well, it feels like a sports bro mentality on a team such as this.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the thing when he says like Cooper's starting, Jim's in the rotation, and Haywood's totally benched the game, like not just like he could come off the bench, like he's not playing? Yeah. Is that the implication?
Yeah, it sounded like he just wasn't going to be in this game, like, whatsoever.
No.
Yeah.
So that's it was interesting, you know. I think maybe that's a differentiation between Jack and Paul that Paul is making to kind of own the game plan, whereas as Jack may have, you know, Jack wanted Haywood last episode. Mm-hmm. So this is an interesting little twist that Paul's made.
I mean, maybe it doesn't matter, but I also kind of want to know if it worked. Like, because it does seem like in Jack's vision game plan, he's like, go big, which I'm pretty sure he's talking about having Haywood in. And so I kind of want to know if the game plan worked or not, but perhaps this is more like what's to come with Haywood, that he is a guy who, like, while there's that whole thing about like him bouncing around teams a lot because he like sued the league to be able to avoid college, but also like he's been around for a while, I think like almost 10 years by this point. So is it just that like he actually, like, because they talk about like whether he's coming and willing to play, so I don't know. Yeah, I guess I don't want to like judge the show as we're like, this is the end of episode 6, there are still 4 more episodes to go, but I'm a little like confused at what we were trying to do here, which I guess with Paul and Haywood's a little bit on the outs, which is too bad, I guess, after, you know, emotionally, like from a show perspective, after he's like telling Cooper, like, you're really good, you know, and then Cooper ends up like taking, not just taking his, like, takes a spot, and then also Haywood's totally out of a spot.
Yeah, I thought maybe it was like a older versus younger thing, a faster versus slower, maybe.
Yeah. I love it how
Paul's show that, but mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry to say.
I love, oh no, you're good. I was gonna say, I love how Paul's basically just like, hey, I'm the captain now. You listen to me. Like,
yeah, I mean, this is the first time we see Paul really like in his confidence. Like,
yeah,
like,
man.
In this moment.
Yeah, yeah, I really liked it a lot. I think it just shows like Paul's actually here to do his job now. You know, I think it was just too used to people like kind of walking over him. Mm-hmm. And then now it's interesting how you go see him turn from like this like stuttering, super nervous guy. And he still kind of is here, but he's like, I'm a little confident now. Like, I gotta, you know, I gotta show you guys why I'm the coach right now.
Do you think we got the moment of transition, or do you think this kind of came out of nowhere?
I think it's well, judging with the amount of stuff that's going on, I mean, if this was like a movie, I would expect like us to get like some transition period, but like, they like literally like right after this, we get a 2-week time skip. So it's like, I'm, you know, you get what you get here. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it just, he comes in his confidence and like, oh, okay. It just kind of felt like you flipped the switch. But, all right. That's cool.
Yeah.
So again, and maybe they don't want to be like, if the strategy doesn't like, if the game plan work, like, I feel like there's a different way to show, I feel like nothing happens that gives him his confidence, I guess, is the thing of like, he just kind of like,
yeah,
gets it. Whereas if, again, I feel like it's this game.
I think if this was like a different type of TV show, we would get like in the middle of a game, he's following Jack's game plan like to a T.
Yes,
and exactly, then he at some point realizes in himself where he sees a better game plan, and then he makes a switch, which gives him the confidence. But right. I feel like in this TV show, we're getting,
he'd be like, Haywood, you're out. And then he'd put in Cooper. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
I feel like in this show, we're not getting the basketballs per se. We're doing it before the game.
Yeah.
Where it seems to be out of nowhere to me. But it's okay. It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah,
I still like the show. I still like the episode. So we cut to Magic meeting Cindy in the tunnel before the game, and he tells her, you know, I didn't ask you to do the whole flower thing. It was too much. You got everybody looking at me suspect. And Cindy says, you know, I was just trying to help. Dr. Day approaches and says that Jeannie has given him the tour. Dr. Day says between the three of them, motioning to Cindy, Jeannie, and Magic, the future is in good hands. Jeannie awkwardly shows them to their seats. I didn't get this. What did you guys think of anything of this? About the three of them?
Cindy,
Jeannie, and Magic, as he's talking to them in the tunnel. He's like, but between the three of you, the future's in good hands.
Oh, I guess Jeannie, Dr. Day, and Matt, right? Like, I don't know which three. Who says the three of you? He says it to Cindy.
Dr. Day says it to, because Cindy, Jeannie, and Magic are all right there.
Yeah, I think, because by this point, he has told Magic, like, you gotta like kind of settle that. Like,
I mean, I think that was just like the show kind of like foreshadowing something, because they're like, oh, you guys are like the future. And I mean, I'm not sure about Cindy, but I mean, obviously Magic and Jeannie, they are the future. So
I thought there was like some weird like intimation that
Jeannie
was like hooking up with Magic, and I was like, what? I didn't understand what was
that would be crazy.
On. Yeah, I was like, I don't know, because Jeannie looked really awkward in that moment.
She gave a look,
and I was like, okay, I don't know what's.
I mean, here's the thing, because I mean, obviously, I don't know this, but like, Magic was the GM of the Lakers about a couple years ago under Jeannie Buss. So I mean, they still have a really good friendship. So I mean, maybe they know something that we don't know.
Whoa. But Isaiah's spilling the tea.
Hey, I'm just saying.
We'll get Josh Lemur on it. He's interviewed them all. We'll get him on if you noticed anything.
Yeah. It was an interesting thing for a Dr. Day to say. I didn't really understand what exactly he meant.
Yeah, I totally I didn't even write this down in my notes. Like,
if you folks out there have any thoughts, let us know, please.
Yes.
Magic then talks to Dr. Day and says he appreciates everything, but you know, if he thinks that Magic and Cindy are more than what they are, then Dad says, well, what would that be? And then Magic pretty much just asks, well, are you like an agent? Doc says, well, I'd rather be considered as your friend. Magic says, well, how much does a friend get? And what's the cut that a friend gets? Doc says he just wants, right now, he just wants the trust, and they can let money come in and come in time once Magic has made plenty more. Magic asks about Cindy and tells Doc, you know, I'm not ready to settle down yet. You know, it's just, Doc tells Magic, well, you know, I love my daughter. I want her to be happy. But me and you, we're a separate thing from you and my daughter. Like, we're business. That's different. Doc says, you know, I don't see why the end of one relationship should sacrifice the other. Magic wants Doc to tell her it's over because, as Doc said, Magic isn't the one that's supposed to give bad news. Doc shakes his hand and says, I'll let her down light.
Oof. Brutal. Wow. World's worst dad. We'll get him a mug.
Sure. He said he's all about business, and that
what a scumbag.
Yeah, very scummy.
Well, and he's also like, don't worry, I'll get paid in time. Like, yeah. Right.
I mean, we can't trust Dr. Day, right?
No,
not gonna end well.
Absolutely not.
I feel like Cookie, Dr. Day sees Cookie at the end. I feel like there could be some like Cookie being like, what are you doing with Cindy's dad?
Yeah, I mean, Cookie gives Dr. Day a look. I mean, we'll get to it, but I think Cookie might be the hero here in the end.
Dr. Day even has one up on Cookie, which we'll get to later. But yeah. This is brutal. It's like a mafia. You make a deal.
I'll take care of it.
Yeah, I'll take care of
your own daughter too. Like, my God,
on my daughter's wedding day.
My daughter's birthday.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So Pryor and Dr. Mike meet up with Spencer in the tunnel. And Dr. Mike offers a party at his place after the game. Pryor says, they got it all. We got white ladies, we got 7-Up, and we got cocaine. That's when we get the flash. This is Richard Pryor, positive influence.
I think this is, to me, this is like, I don't think being benched is going to play well for Spencer Haywood.
Haywood seems to actually consider it at the moment because, you know, he's at a low point. So, you know, this is maybe a time where he considers doing something naughty.
Yeah.
So we get the shot of the guys come out to play. Jerry West and Bill meet up in the tunnel, saying it's been quite a day. Yeah. In the hospital, you can hear the broadcast over the radio talking about Paul taking over the game and that this one's for Jack. Jack's in bed with labored breathing while his wife lays next to him. And then Jack all of a sudden stops breathing. We get a panicked wife, you know, trying to pound on his chest and screaming for help. And I think we get another flash of Jack seemingly going over the game plan in his head, trying to relay to Paul what the game plan should be. Then we cut to Jack waking up. We cut to Paul running down the hall. At that point, we know something's up because Paul's supposed to be at the game right now. So Paul runs into Jack's room and tells Paul to go big against Thompson in Denver. Paul tells Jack, we already played that game, Jack. That was 2 weeks ago.
Do you want the ultimate Tracy? I try not to drop many F-bombs on this, but this Tracy Letts line read of Jack McKinney when he realized
the game. Take it, Grace. Take it.
You don't want it, Jason? It's
take it.
Good.
Take it. Take it.
Fuck my dick.
So random.
Like, fuck, I came back. I'm back.
No.
So good. Yeah, so quite a wake up there for Jack. After all that time, that's what he says. All right. That was quite a entrance back into real life. what do we think about the Jack of it all coming back?
Yeah, I mean, hey. That was that's a famous last words or famous words back, you know. This scene and then the last scene, which we're about to talk about, such a weird ending to this episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
such a weird episode.
Something and something interesting. Like we talked about, I talked a little bit about the game they were playing, going out to the game. We got a couple of shots of the game, but we never discovered the score of the game, whether they won or not. And a real life spoiler, they did win the game by 4 points in overtime. So the first game of the Paul Westhead era, they won.
Yeah. I imagine that, like, now that we're 2 weeks in, we can like, we'll get like the, like, update at the beginning of the next episode, like how it has been going. The Jack wake, the line read is so interesting. I mean, I presume that, I think we, the that's it for Jack, right? But I wonder how much he will play in the same way that like West stops being the coach and then moves into this role, like whether McKinney will be a presence, whether Tracy Letts will be a presence on the show. They give him like this moment here at the end. So even just to like track his recovery a bit will be interesting. This show has a lot. There's a lot of, you look at the main cast of the show, it's
just full of heavy hitters. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Even the secondary roles, heavy hitters.
Yeah.
So yeah, we, in the last scene of the episode, we go to Michigan State. We see Dr. Day approaching Cookie on campus, and Dr. Day gives her tickets to when the Lakers come to Detroit on behalf of Magic. So yeah, I mean, it was funny when Dr. Day comes up, like, Dr. Day, like, what are you doing here? Like, why are you here? Cookie says, oh, I thought that Magic would be having her daughter to this event. Well, Dr. says, well, Magic asked her and to make of that what you will. Cookie's friend Horton says, shit, if you don't, I will. Cookie tells Dr. Day to tell Magic she'll think about it. And Dr. Day says, Cookie smiles, and that's how the episode ends. She has a sly smile on her face.
I love it. She's like, tell him I'll think about it. He's like, yeah, like that's the only thing that leads me to believe that, like, perhaps that this little scene here, but like he goes to visit her, this is a big ask to ask your agent to, I guess you could do some business in Lansing, I guess. You go to Detroit
and can you fly all the way out to Detroit?
Yeah.
As maybe he's accompanying his heartbroken daughter back.
Cindy's Dr. Day's from Lansing.
Obviously. Yeah, yeah. Cindy's, Cookie knew who Dr. Day was. Like she knew, like I'm sure she's seen him around the community or whatever. So yeah, she knew who Dr. Day was.
Okay, well that could be more like that could be fuel to like, well, we know who Dr. you know, I don't know if you should like trust Dr. Day, you know, could be more fuel to that. Whether Cookie can see through it all will be interesting.
But it's interesting to personally send someone. And not like send them in like a letter or something saying come to LA to watch me play basketball. It's kind of a big flex. Like I had this person personally bring you tickets.
And the
father of my
now
ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
Just to let you know that I'm no longer with Cindy.
Power move.
Yeah, for sure.
Weird.
Yeah. It is weird, but
yeah. I can call it a power move.
Maybe that's why Magic is like, I'm not going to watch this
guy show. Is not a good dad. I'm so sorry. He's so messy.
Yeah, he's a bad dad.
He's not even a real person.
He's made up. So
I guess we should be thankful for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is our episode.
That is our episode.
Fun episode. Very plot heavy. A lot of different than what we've been getting. We didn't get any backstory for any of our characters this episode, which we got pretty consistently over the episodes. So what do you think the future holds for the pacing of the episodes and what we'll get?
Well, I wonder, this is definitely the Paul episode. If you're gonna give anybody, it's you know, it's the most Paul-ish. I just wonder if they kind of weren't sure how to, like, if there wasn't anything that they were like from his backstory.
Paul's life has not been interesting.
Yeah, I get it. Where's the tragedy, Paul? Come on. I don't know. You know, we're like the backstory is like the tragedy of what happens to Jack is what like sort of paints Paul's picture here. I know Jared in the Discord was saying like it's a lot of tonal whiplash in this episode, which he's not normally a fan of, but thinks it works here. Riley said he loves the show a lot. So it seems like pretty positive reviews of the show. I don't know if it's as strong. I think there's just a couple. I've talked a lot about how I feel like sometimes the show is missing like a beat. And I think in this episode, it feels like they're maybe missing a few beats at times. But again, four more episodes, so we'll see.
Yeah, I think I was pretty surprised that they took care of so much business in this episode, where coming into the episode, I probably thought it was going to primarily deal with Jack's accent. But it seemed like at times that Jack's accent was on the back burner and there's a lot of more other stuff going on.
Mm-hmm. And they almost used Jack's accent to propel all the other like the Magic Cindy stuff, right? Gets like like there's like a inciting incident about like where they're going to visit Jack. It doesn't really feel about like how the people care about Jack as much as it's just like,
yeah, but that doesn't feel like it was because of the Jack storyline. Like, they could have made that storyline without Jack even being in existence. Like, it could have been mm-hmm. something else that Cindy stepped in on.
It's interesting you were talking about that this episode felt very plot heavy, because we've been having this conversation a lot about shows covering a lot of stuff on PSR, whether shows are like vibe shows, like character shows, plot shows. This is the most plot heavy episode of a show that really feels like a vibe show, mm-hmm. of like, we're just hanging out in the late 70s in LA. Mm-hmm. And this was the most sort of plot forward stuff we get, certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic show. Great episode. Not my favorite episode, but still a fantastic episode.
Yeah. Isaiah, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for inviting me. So oh my fun. God.
What are you up to, and where can people find you?
People can find me at 8BallBangers, literally the number 8, then BallBangers on all social media. If you want to see me like rant or troll people, that's where you can find me. And then you can also see me podcasting not only on RHAP, but you can also find me on my own little account called Silent Podcast, where we talk about scripted TV and reality TV and animation and all that fun stuff. So check us out.
Cool. I am on Twitter at High From Grace, here on Post Show Recaps, doing weekly movie coverage with Ariel. This week we're going to talk about Sonic the Hedgehog coming up. We talked about Morbius last week, so lots of movie coverage here. I will, as announced today, Ariel, I'm joining the duo that normally cover Scandal. They've been covering Dropout and some other stuff. Ariel and Marissa, I'll be joining them to talk about Russian Doll. So we're previewing season one. We covering two episodes at a time to recap season one, and then when season two drops on April 20th, a week and a bit from today, we'll do daily podcasts for each episode of season two. So very much looking forward to that. Over on Rob has a podcast covering sports with the Off Speed podcast. Recently had Nick Pollock from Pitcher List come and talk about the art of pitching. In a few weeks, we'll be talking about Sports Scandal with the crime scene duo of Sarah and Mari. So very excited for that. Jason, what about you?
You can find me over on the RHAP network, over on the Married at First Sight Wrap Up. Every week I'm with Asia Welch as we're covering this season of Married at First Sight, having a lot of fun. Don't even have to watch the show to listen to the podcast, as we've been told many times. That is where I will be. Anything else that comes my way will be on Twitter at JAYR1085. Folks, that is our show this week, and please remember, keep dreaming, keep dribbling.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.